Coming up next on Tech News Today, Apple's App Store broke all sorts of its own records in 2016. Also, Corning is bringing Gorilla Glass to your car for the glass everywhere experience. Dell has an 8K monitor that looks realer than real. Facebook's dedication to secrecy and the widest laptop screen you've ever seen. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1677, recorded Thursday, January 5th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything that has to do with technology. And today we are the rainbow and unicorn emoji of Tech News.
Oh, okay. That works for me. Although we were trying, because it was the most important thing to try to do before the show instead of getting started on time, trying to figure out how to do emoji on my little Chromebook here, my Chromebook Pixel, and I just couldn't get there. Mm-hmm. I feel incomplete now.
Yeah, I know. Well, didn't Scooter X in the chat room sent you a link? It didn't work?
It was a link, and it started me down the path. I think what I need is to not have a cold and to have time to actually focus on it to get there. That's okay.
Yeah.
Emoji, I don't know. I'm just not an emoji-er.
Well, let's change that.
Okay, we'll work on that. Let's talk about some tech news. Apple's growth in iPhone sales may be slowing, but its App Store revenue is doing gangbusters. The company says the App Store broke records through 2016, and even on New Year's Day last weekend, $20 billion were paid to developers throughout the year. And when you figure that developers earn 70% from App Store sales, that puts total revenue somewhere in the ballpark of around $28 billion. For the year. This really just kind of seems to illustrate how Apple stands to gain from kind of the services approach that they're really, kind of buckling down on. And obviously, that's working well for them. If hardware sales are slowing a little bit, hey, make it up with all the devices that everybody has through the App Store, as one example.
Exactly. And we mentioned that yesterday, that people are really willing to pay for apps now when they weren't in the past. The App Store is in 155 countries. There's 2.2 million apps. That's 20% up from last year. And 21,000 new iMessage apps. So I don't know if you know this, but, iMessage.
What is iMessage? I don't understand. Apple thing.
What iMessage is.
Yeah,
but I don't know if you knew that not until OS X could you get apps on iMessage. So now there's a whole new character.
Like inside of iMessage.
Yeah,
so that extends the kind of app capabilities, ecosystem, whatever, into a completely different platform.
Yeah, so you can get stickers or words with friends through iMessage. Which,
or emoji, but you could probably do that already.
You could always get emoji, but yeah, they don't sell emoji in the App Store.
Maybe there's fancy ones.
They do.
I don't know.
But I am a fan of the apps and iMessage. I communicate with my 13-year-old daughter purely through Words with Friends. That's how we communicate with
her. How are you going to communicate with everyone on iMessage when you're using my Android phone in less than a week?
That's a good question. Good that you brought that up.
We didn't talk about it, whether we were going to bring this up today, but here we go.
Yeah, we've been talking. We've been telling you we were going to switch.
Yeah.
I was going to take Jason's Android phone. He was going to take my iPhone. You kept getting new ones, but I'm going to take the Pixel starting Monday. You're going to take my beautiful iPhone 7. Mm-hmm. His name is Matt, because he's Matt Black, and you must call him by his name.
Okay.
And
is that what I say when I summon Siri? I say, Matt. Hey, Matt?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't recommend using Siri. She'll tell you nothing.
So. But I'm going to have to. We're going to do this trade for like a month. Mm-hmm. So we're dedicated to this. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an interesting month. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Of course you are, because you get my iPhone.
I know. I can't wait to get my hands on that iPhone.
I'm looking forward to it too.
It's going to be fun.
Well, Quartz reports that the U.S. Department of Labor is suing Google over disclosure of compensation data and documents. Google could be barred from all federal contracts for not divulging confidential employment information from thousands of employees. Now, all companies with U.S. governmental contracts are required by a decades-old law to release this kind of information. Google says it's committed to hiring practices that support diversity, and they have worked with the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs. But according to the lawsuit, Google's diversity report does not meet federal standards for government contractors, and they require more information on employees, salaries, and benefits. So this could be a big deal for them if they lose all their government contract. They've turned over thousands of documents, they said. But, you know, we know from their diversity report, from looking into it, it's less than stellar. Mm-hmm. This request was made in September of 2015, and Google hasn't complied yet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, based on what Google is saying here, they're doing this to protect their employees. And I believe them when they say that they want to protect their employees and everything. Having said that, these rules were in place when they signed up to do this. Labor Department says Google agreed to a higher level of scrutiny at the beginning of all this when they signed on to do business with the federal agencies. And like you say, their diversity record, even though they're being relatively transparent and upfront with these numbers on a yearly basis, and thankfully they are doing at least that, they have not been very good. So if the whole point of this inquiry is to look further into that aspect of business, I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea to kind of play ball. You know, on the other side of that, Google received $7.8 million from the government in 2016. It's not like that's moving the needle any for the company. So, you know, you could very easily see Google kind of stick to its moral high ground in regards to this and why they say they're protecting the employees and maybe walk away. I don't know what the long-term repercussions of that would be, though, losing those contracts.
Why do they say they're protecting? That it's just personal? I mean, it's not connected to certain people. Not. They're just saying the percentage of people who are white versus who are not white.
Well, yeah, but it's even further than that. I think it's salary information, and Google is saying that they should not have to reveal that about their employees. They want to protect their employees and not have to share that kind of information outside of the company.
Yeah, well.
Right. Well, speaking of Google, Google announced that it's opening up its assistant AI to Android TV and beyond. NVIDIA specifically announced that its new Shield TV streaming box with 4K streaming capability and Google Assistant in the box. And that's also going to be facilitated with a remote with a built-in microphone so you can talk to Google Assistant. That's going to be part of that Android TV box. Even beyond that, NVIDIA unveiled the NVIDIA Spot. Everybody's doing the same things right now, which is a hybrid microphone speaker that you can plug into the wall to extend access to Assistant throughout the home. I think that actually sounds pretty killer. I like that a lot.
You want Google Assistant on your TV and throughout your home?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
I mean, basically what this is an extension of Google Home. Yeah, exactly. So instead of having to get a Google Home in all these rooms, this is just another vehicle for it. You know, getting it, like, for example, like just taking my house as one example, we have a Google Home in the kitchen. I could get a Google Home for the living room, or I could get this, which belongs in the living room, has Google Assistant, can do the things like control my lights, you know, with the microphone on the remote. I don't know if it's like apples to apples, 100% comparison to Google Home, but it's more or less the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And Google Assistant on the TV too. You would like that?
Sure, totally. Why not?
Yeah. Hopefully, it works better than Siri on the Apple TV, which is garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my interaction, like Google Home and Google Assistant, are more or less the same thing. Google Home is kind of like the hardware vehicle that Assistant lives inside. So if someone enjoys talking to their Google Home and getting the benefit of whatever Assistant provides to them through that, they're going to get the same thing through the TV. It's just a different platform to do it. Doing things like, you know, show me Stranger Things on Netflix, I could see that as being handy if you're kind of I don't know, if you learn to do it that way as opposed to going the long form way. But if it's there and it works, then absolutely, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Apple TV does that. You know, if I know exactly what I want to watch, I can press the Siri button and it will show, you know, it will bring it up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for anything beyond that.
But it just doesn't always work seamlessly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of fun asking Google Home, you know, where Santa Claus is. That's been a lot of fun. So hopefully you could do that on your TV too. Mm-hmm. And NVIDIA, by the way, is also working for automaker Audi. They've actually been working together for a long time, but they are working together on a new project right now to bring NVIDIA's flavor of artificial intelligence into cars by 2020. They have ambitions to hit level 4 autonomy in the process. So that's, you know, this is still 4 years away, but.
Yeah, NVIDIA made a lot of announcements at CES. I mean, they were a big deal. They're one of the biggest. I mean, they had their stock price was one of the best performing stocks of all stocks last year. They were up 230%. If you look at this graph, I mean, it just like zoomed up. Wow. And that's all due to AI because you need the, you know, you need NVIDIA. For, you know, you need a lot of processor power. So, you know, they're a company that's been around for a long time, but like, you know, we talk about AI constantly. Something has to power that, and NVIDIA might be the thing. So
yeah,
it's exciting for them.
Absolutely.
Corning is not just for casseroles anymore. Today at CES, Corning released a concept car made of Gorilla Glass. It's not made entirely of glass, although that would be bananas. But a lot of the car is made of glass. Now, if you live in a warm climate, this may immediately conjure the feeling of a sweaty road trip. But Antoine Goodwin from CNET had a chance to sit in the concept car. He says the glass is electrochromatic, which means it lets light in when you want it and then keeps the sun off you when you don't want it.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool. I love it.
Corning glass, it's thinner, it's lighter, it's more scratch resistant than the glass car makers use now. The Corning glass dashboard and center console contains fiber optic controls, but it's also really flexible. And that means that it's easier to produce the parts of the car that are made of glass, which means a cheaper car. Not a cheap car, but a cheaper car. So I want a car made of glass. Corning says this is the age of glass, so everything's going to be made of glass. We will soon be made of glass ourselves.
Mm. Mm. I don't want to drop on the cement outside because I've seen far too many Gorilla Glass phones actually shatter when they drop from my pocket.
Well, Apple can fix you for $130 if you go into the store. Ford already uses Corning glass in some parts of its car to reduce the weight. Makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It's less weight, and that, I mean, overall means better efficiency, better fuel efficiency. I don't know how much of an overall impact that makes on the vehicle because a lot of other things inside a vehicle that actually make it pretty incredibly heavy. But they say 2 times more resistant to things like a sharp stone impact. You're driving down the freeway and, you know, a huge truck kicks up a stone to the glass. It's, you know, more resistant to that. So I guess that's definitely a good thing. Mm-hmm. I just personally, like, I always want Gorilla Glass to be better than it is. I feel like at some point we should get to the point to where dropping a phone, just using a phone as an example, down to the cement shouldn't just, you know, end up spiraled into a million different tiny little pieces. And I don't know, maybe obviously it would be worse without Gorilla Glass, I have to imagine, but still, like, we're not quite there. So when I read this, I was like, yeah, but I've seen so many Gorilla Glass screens spider and break. Mm-hmm. But it's better than what we have there already. Mm-hmm. So
we should try some break tests when we
That's a really good idea.
See how far we can throw
don't
them.
Don't do that. The resolution wars continue as Dell showed off its new Ultra Sharp 32 Ultra HD 8K monitor at CES. True friends call it UP3218K for short. It's a 31.5-inch monitor, 7680 by 4320 resolution. That's a cool 280 pixels per inch. So, you know, realer than real. The monitor is nearly bezel-less because that's such a hot trend right now, too. Expect the UP3218K to hit store shelves and likely not your desk at home because it's really expensive. A measly $4,999 later this year. It does look pretty sharp, though.
It does. Realer than real. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm saying. We'll all be made of glass, just like that. And then they also announced the Dell Canvas. That's like the Surface Studio.
Right, right.
But without the PC, it's just a monitor, which looks pretty amazing too. And it does the same thing as the studio does, where it folds down and, you know, you can use it, but it's just the monitor. You can connect it to whatever powerful PC you have. I mean, that was the big complaint Leo had, that the PC for the Surface Studio wasn't strong enough, but now you can attach it to whatever PC. And then it comes with those same little puck that's called a totem, not the dial.
They all, man, it's the, everything's so similar mm-hmm. right now. But it really is kind of like the resurgence of the desktop PC right now. It seemed mm-hmm. like it was going away, and now it's kind of reinventing itself. Dell also showed a new desktop that we saw earlier in this footage. The all-in-one PC for audio files is called the XPS 27. It's flanked with 6 total speakers on the front, so the entire bottom of that is just lined with speakers, 4 dedicated to low and mid-range frequencies, another 2 tweeters in the corners, and they say it's 10 times the base of HP's NV27. Okay.
Do you have a music PC at home?
I have a music production Mac, but yeah, no, it doesn't have speakers like this. Mm. I have studio speakers that I bought for music production, so a little different. But anyways, very cool. Starts at $1,499 all the way up to beyond $2,000 with premium specs on that. So, all right, coming up, we're going to check in with Father Robert Ballester, who is at CES. He's got his hands on a few really cool things, and we're going to talk all a little bit about that. But first, we need to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Epson. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. It's the EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer. It doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an amazing, innovative, refillable ink tank that earned it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. No more out-of-ink frustration. It actually includes up to 2 years of ink, equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. And it's powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder, easy wireless printing from tablets and from smartphones, which is not always the easiest thing in the world. Here they've got you covered. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year, and now it should belong in your home. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to check it out for yourself. You can transform the way your home, office, or work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank, and we thank Epson for their support. All right, so Father Robert Ballester has been moving and shaking his way through many of the CES festivities these past few days. Last night, the crew was at the Pepcom event to get a firsthand look at some of the cool products hitting the show floor today, now that CES is now officially open for everyone. Take it away, Father Robert.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Megan. I'm here at Pepcom Digital Experience. This is actually pre-CES. CES is going to start tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. sharp. But before then, we got a little taste of some of the companies that are going to be exhibiting. Now, just tonight, we've seen, I'd say, a trend towards the maturation of technologies that we saw at CES 2016 and 2015. For example, NextVR has announced that they made a partnership with the NBA to broadcast one NBA game in 360. Now, it's not just setting up a camera in the middle of the court and letting it run. They're going to be doing essentially ESPN with 360 cameras. What this means is that people who are looking for content for their VR setup, that really expensive one that they may have created for gaming, will now be able to get an immersive experience that is directed and yet still has that freedom of motion that we love from VR systems. We also saw things from Anker. They've got this wonderful line from Nebula of laser projectors. In fact, there was one that I thought was an LCD panel for the home for under $3,000. And they had a mobile unit, a Pico projector, that could project a 60-inch picture for about, 3 hours. It's an interesting thing from a company that is known for power products. However, the thing that most interests me is a technology that makes something that we all enjoy, namely smart homes, much more accessible to those who maybe aren't as tech-savvy as those in our audience. And this is it right here. This is the SwitchMate. It looks like a nondescript piece of plastic, but what this is a way to turn your smart home into a smarter home without having to remove any outlets, without having to replace any switches. Quite simply, it uses two magnets to attach over an existing light switch, and then with the push of a button, it moves that internal lever up and down to flip your switch. Now, this is also Bluetooth connected, and it has a motion sensor. What that means is that you can have a light in your bathroom that automatically turns on when you walk into the room. It means that you can set a sleep schedule on your app, on your phone, and control all the lights and all the power outlets simply with the flick of a switch. And it also means that this is technology that's easy enough for me to give to my mother, my grandmother, whoever it might be, who isn't a tech genius, and have them turn their smart house into a smart home in just a matter of seconds. This is the kind of tech that I think we can expect from this CES. Everything's going to be getting just a little bit better, just a little bit easier, just a little bit smarter. I'm Father Robert Ballas here from CES 2017. If you want to see all of our coverage, be sure to go to twit.tv/specials. Until then, back to you, Megan and Jason, in the studio.
All right. Keep it real out there in Vegas, and don't get sick. If you were here, you wouldn't get sick. Of course, I say that. I've got a nasty cold right now. Thank you for doing that. Thanks for taking the bullet for everyone, and I hope you don't get sick, Father Robert. You can find all that stuff, like he said, twit.tv/specials, and I believe we're going to have a little bit more from Father Robert on tomorrow's TNT as well.
And we have an email about Padres Mohu's antenna segment from yesterday. Ken Hill from Georgia writes, I have three Mohu amplified antennas, one for each TV in the home. I live about 25 miles northeast of Atlanta. I'm able to pick up 65 of the 90-odd channels available. I didn't hear him mention a price or the range of the antenna. I'll be calling them first thing tomorrow. Now, CNET says it's about $150, this antenna. It arrives in April. I don't know if he said the range of it yet.
But. Yeah, I didn't catch that. And I mean, just to reiterate, like, this is an OTA antenna, essentially. So it's going to pick up whatever you can actually pick up where you are. And it's not, you know, obviously you're not putting this on your roof, right? Like, it's not a rooftop antenna. So if you're in a big city like San Francisco, this might be a really good option. I know that something like this probably works better there than it does in Petaluma, for instance, where, I don't know, our options are pretty limited up here. I've tried OTA antennas inside the house, and I mean, I ended up taking it back because it just really didn't give me anything. Mm-hmm. So your mileage definitely would vary here. You'd have to be pretty confident that you get really good kind of signals from a lot of different OTA networks in order for that to make sense.
Will it let me contact ET?
Looks like maybe, but I think you're going to have to pick up a package of Reese's Pieces to make that work.
Okay. Awesome. Well, after the break, find out why Facebook is so good at keeping secrets. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Now, we are all used to losing our possessions. Newsweek reports that the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things that they own but cannot find. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past, and I'll tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys. You can help find your wallet, your luggage, instruments, bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in seconds. If I had a pair of AirPods, I'd probably put a tracker right on that little case. I'd stick one to it. It's a coin-sized device. It's constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items via key loop or an adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to a year. You can add a laser-engraved message to every Tracker Bravo. You can put your return information or your pet's info if you have it on your pet. And you can now personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with a tap of the button. It is so easy. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. Now, if you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker and then your phone will ring even if your phone is on silent. There are over 3.5 million devices shipped. Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item will show up on a map, even if it's miles away. And if you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll get a GPS update of where your item is located. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for you, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today. Late last year, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg came under fire for his initial response to the accusation that Facebook was partly responsible for the results of the U.S. presidential election. Now, a small group of employees openly defied Zuckerberg by starting a task force to investigate Facebook's role in the dissemination of fake news. Now, in an article posted today on Recode, Kurt Wagner says this open defiance of Zuckerberg is rare at the company, and he's here to talk about why. Welcome back to the show, Kurt.
Hey, Megan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming back on. So unlike Apple, Facebook is not a secretive company when it comes to its employees. Can you tell us a little bit about how you think this works?
Yeah. So a lot of actually all the employees have access to kind of a beta version of the app. So if they want to, you know, test products before they're pushed out to the masses, they can test them with their employee base. And then the story I wrote today was about these Q&As that Mark Zuckerberg has every Friday. With rare exceptions, unless maybe he's traveling abroad. He's pretty religious about these Q&As with the whole company. They broadcast it to people who are in offices outside of California. And folks get to ask him all kinds of questions, and he'll talk about products, and he'll talk about strategy. And very little of that ultimately leaks and gets to people like me who like to report about it. And I thought it was fascinating. So I did my best to try and talk to people who used to work there and figure out what are these Q&As like. And that's what I wrote about today.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a little bit about how shame is involved. Like it's the corporate culture there is that you don't talk about the company, you don't leak to the company. As it seems at Apple, there's not the same sort of shame because we hear a lot of leaks. Does Apple and do other companies like Google have Q&A sessions like this every week?
Yeah, there are other companies that do. Google kind of started this from what I learned. They have something called TGIF, and I believe it's similar. It's kind of like an all-hands meeting. I don't know if it's quite as open in the sense of like people coming up to the microphone asking questions, but others, Twitter has these every couple of weeks. I believe Uber has something similar. I mentioned Nextdoor as being kind of a maybe lesser-known social network in San Francisco that does something similar. But I think the shame thing is more – there is – what I found surprising was that I assumed that there would be some really harsh penalties for leaking stuff, and there are. There's an example in the piece of a story leaking to the information about M, which is the artificial intelligent assistant that's in Messenger. And Mark Zuckerberg said, hey, we're going to find out who did this, and we're going to fire this person, and they did. But I found what was surprising to me was that was not actually much of the deterrent to people. The deterrent was more, we don't want to let down our fellow Facebookers. You know, there's a pride of working here. There's a feeling of loyalty towards Zuckerberg that if you leak something, it's like you're betraying your company, your colleagues, and people will, you know, you'll feel shame. You'll feel bad. And so I was kind of surprised that there was this unwritten, almost moral code there that what happens inside Facebook stays inside Facebook. And that's why we don't hear a lot of stuff early.
And I guess then the magical question is, what is Facebook doing differently to foster that kind of embrace of secrecy amongst employees? Because I think overall, I mean, yes, penalties is somewhat of a deterrent, but still information is going to get out regardless. But you really don't hear this about Facebook. And if people that are working at Facebook are that kind of, I don't, that feel that strongly about not letting these secrets get out, there's something in the water. Like there's something that Facebook is doing probably from the top down that right. is fostering this kind of dedication to the workplace. I actually, now that I'm saying this, isn't Facebook usually on one of the lists of like the best places to work? I think it's near the top usually, so that's probably part of it.
Yeah, it's part of it, and I mean these Q&As are a big part of it, right? When you have someone of Mark Zuckerberg's status, of his celebrity, and you get them to take an hour of their time every week to answer your questions openly and honestly, that's pretty cool, you know? And I mm-hmm. think that when he entrusts his employees with this information and he says, hey, I'm going to open up about Snapchat. Like, I don't do this publicly, but I'm going to do it with you because I trust you guys. That is a reason that a lot of people, you know, they keep things to themselves. I mean, this story was, you know, a lot of the folks I talked to for the story don't work at Facebook anymore, right? I mean, it's hard to get people who still work at the company to talk to you because of this very reason. I think they feel that they're entrusted with information from someone that they respect, and so therefore they take that really seriously. And I think that's not always the case at a lot of these companies. As they get bigger, the CEO gets further and further away from the rank and file, and I think clearly Mark Zuckerberg has found a way to kind of keep that small company mentality even as Facebook has grown.
Yeah, I mean, you write about how these other companies don't have a Zuckerberg. Like, that's why a lot of people work for Facebook, because of him, whereas, you know, Google doesn't have anybody at the top like that. Twitter doesn't. None of these big companies. Microsoft doesn't. I mean, I think Satya Nadella is inspiring, but not in the same way. He wasn't there from the beginning. Do you think that that is changing now? I mean, with the task force that people came up with Zuckerberg's responses, his initial responses, which were just to say, oh, no, Facebook had, you know, it's silly to think that Facebook fake news had any influence. And then he sort of came around. Do you think things are changing there?
Well, I think it's hard to appease 16,000 people that are, you know, one of the reasons that a lot of these folks go to work for Facebook is because they want to be able to speak their mind, right? They're presented this opportunity once a week to come up and ask whatever they want. They're used to kind of owning their own beliefs and political beliefs and social beliefs and things like that. And so I think what we saw here was, hey, you know, Mark Zuckerberg may be able to get the vast majority of people to buy into whatever he says because they respect him, but there are going to be dissenters. What I found fascinating was when that happened and that story first came out, I started reaching out to people and I said, hey, this is crazy. I haven't heard of anything like this before. And employees were like, I can't believe that this happened. This is so crazy to have Facebook employees kind of defy Mark. That just doesn't happen at Facebook, or at least it hasn't happened. I would be surprised if this is the kind of thing we see a lot of. I think that people go to work there because they respect them. But clearly there was a, you know, this election created a lot of animosity for a lot of people. And so I think it was probably a bit of a perfect storm. If we keep seeing this happen, though, then I think you have to be a little concerned, because what you don't want to do is get so big as a company that you lose that culture that made you, you know, unique or special. And I think up until now, Facebook's probably been able to do that. But, you know, that's at least a small crack in that system. I don't know if it's going to become something bigger.
Maybe this is a little inside baseball, but I think I have a feeling we're talking to the right person to ask this question. Why does someone ultimately choose to leak company secrets? I realize that's a wide, there's probably many answers to that, but why would someone inside Facebook decide, I think I want to go, you know, tell someone about this M assistant, even though I know I'm not supposed to? What's the motivation?
It's actually a really good question, and one that I kind of ask myself too, right? As you meet people along the way and you build relationships, you kind of wonder, why, you know, why do they talk? Why do they talk to me? Why do they talk to others? I think, you know, I legitimately think a lot of people have good intentions, believe it or not. I don't think it's very common that someone says, hey, I know we're working really hard on this product. I'm going to go over and screw that up for everybody.
Right.
I think there, you know, when you hear about CEOs that are doing things poorly, right? They're mismanaging, they're treating people unfairly. Well, then it's kind of obvious to realize why people would leak. But when things are going really good at Facebook, I think stuff comes out because it's almost accidental, right? Like, people are either excited to talk about it, or they're almost as eager to find out what's going on as you are. And so it's almost like, hey, I'm hearing this. Like, have you heard something similar, right? And it kind of tips you off to certain things. I certainly don't think people do it because they want to screw over their colleagues. That's not usually they're usually gone at the company by that point. But it is a good question, right? Because you wonder what are the benefits of doing this, and it's not always easy to connect those dots.
Yeah,
it is often former employees. Like, all of the trending news, that scandal from last year, all came from former employees, disgruntled employees that had been hired as journalists and then let go.
And people who felt that the company was mishandling that too, right? Like, whether they were right or wrong, they clearly felt that Facebook had a role or responsibility that they were shirking. And so they said, hey, we're going to go ahead and expose this because we want it to change, right? And so that's a little bit more clear as to why someone would share that. But, you know, if you're happily working in a company, there's not often a lot of reasons to come to talk to the press and say things you know you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some might obviously be accidental. I mean, I'm sure you know people, lots of people that work at Facebook, and it's almost Facebook's fault. Like, I know two people that work at Facebook. I might not know that they work at Facebook if I wasn't connected with them through Facebook. know? It's like it connects you to all these people that you would have lost touch with otherwise. So yeah, I imagine that's something. I want to ask you a little bit about Mark Zuckerberg's, not his resolution, but his goal for the year, right, of like talking, yeah, to people. What do you make of that? Do you think he has political aspirations? And I mean, because you talk in the article about how he used to be such a horrible public speaker, but now speaking every week, he's really become something of a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, I think he's really improved as a public speaker. And when I first saw his, I guess it was an annual challenge, as how he says it. I mean, most of us would probably just call it a resolution, but when I first saw that, yeah, part of me was like, hey, this really does sound like a political, whistle stop tour, right? But I don't necessarily think that he's going to leave Facebook next year and go run for governor or something. I do. It sounds like maybe that because he left a loophole in the way that they restructured their stock so that he could pursue that someday, it sounds like maybe that's crossed his mind. What I think is that, you know, the tone I took from his post was that it's been a really trying political year, or 2016 was very trying. I think a lot of folks in Silicon Valley realized, hey, we're probably not as in touch with other parts of the country as we'd like to think that we are. I think a lot of tech folks, definitely a lot of venture capitalists said, whoa, here are the things that we really thought were important, and it turns out they're not important to a vast majority of Americans. And I think Mark Zuckerberg probably had that same realization and said, if I'm building this platform for 1.8 billion people all around the world, I need to make sure that I know what they care about, what they want. And here's a good opportunity. It's probably good PR too, right? To go around all universities and small towns across America. Like, no one's really going to ding him for that, I guess, unless they say, hey, you should be spending more time in the office. But so I think for him, it's more of like, let's get outside this tech bubble, the Silicon Valley bubble, and learn about what my users actually want.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. If anyone has any more interest in this, definitely read Kurt's article at Recode and all of his articles. And if you work for Facebook and you decided that you're not loyal and you don't feel shame, then tweet Kurt at KurtWagner8. And
even better than that, come tell me all the great things that you're working on, because that's what I'd love to hear about.
Yeah, right on.
All right. Thanks so much, right, Kurt. Thanks.
Thank you, okay, Kurt. Guys. Have a good night. Bye. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Melted_House on Twitter, who says they're watching while developing websites. There we are, a tiny little, looks like a square box down there. What device is that? Is that an iPad? Like an iPad mini or something?
It doesn't look like an iPad.
Yeah, but I can't tell what that is.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
In a case.
It just looks so small and mm-hmm. square. Mm-hmm. Looks so square. Anyways, I'm not judging. You're watching. And that's what we love to hear. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Coming up, three screens are always better than one. We'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever wanted to buy a house, or maybe you already bought a house and you're thinking about refinancing, it's not always cut and dry as far as how you approach getting securing that mortgage. So the whole process, has a lot of speed bumps along the way. You got to pick out a lot of pieces of information from all over the place. It's not always that easy to come up with that information, but it's necessary to the process. Well, Rocket Mortgage is here to help you simplify that. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone that you can trust, who has your best interest in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. You won't have to waste time searching through all of those stacks of paperwork, complicating your life. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. This is all online. You can do it in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time so you can make sure to get the mortgage solution that's perfect for your financial situation. Whether you're looking to buy a home or, like I said, refinance your existing mortgage, you can do that here as well. You can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting and go completely online. Check it out for yourself. Take it into your own hands. Go to quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. You may think you've seen it all, but have you ever seen a three-screen laptop? Razer has a prototype laptop at CES called Project Valerie that is sporting three side-by-side 17-inch 4K displays that fold into the laptop design at the push of a button. So you don't even have to like do this like a chump, pull them out and snap them into place. You push a button and it does it for you. The laptop is two times as thick as the Razer Blade Pro that it's based upon. This is kind of like the evolution, a prototype version evolution of the Razer Blade Pro. It weighs more than 11 pounds. So in that sense, calling it a portable is maybe a smidge of a stretch compared to your average laptop. But three screens everywhere you go, 180 degrees field of view. What do you think, Megan?
I'm not a gamer, but I would love to just have Twitter coming at me. Like three screens of Twitter. Or I'd love to see
three feeds, really big.
How I watch TNT on that. Like just coming, yeah.
If someone's a CES, you can have the most epic how I watch by going there and pulling up TNT on one of the screens.
Or just use Photoshop. It's 11 pounds. I mean, this might be the only exercise you get, so that's that's good. I like that. And
when you're not using it, it's a weight.
Yeah.
You can do squats.
I tried to find a video of it in action, but apparently at CES, the robot arms weren't working. It was just out like that. No one could see it folding back up on itself.
Oh, that looked like that animated, but I think it animated in an obscure way that we will never be able to see it again. It's pretty cool. I never thought I'd see the day. I have to imagine there's a...
You might not see the day.
That's true. It is a prototype.
We have not yet seen the day. Valerie's not here yet.
But it would be cool. Like we're always talking about like flexible screens. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Ooh. It's like the Magic Leap demo. We'll never see this.
Does it have a kickstand in the back to hold it up? Because, I mean, I imagine without that, it would probably just flop over, right?
Yeah.
It would just flop backwards. That would not be a good user experience.
And then if it falls off the table, man.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
That does look really nice. I could totally see three oversized Twitter feeds, one per screen.
What if you accidentally got your head caught in there? If, like, you were leaning in real close and then it just...
I would imagine they've protected, they've ensured that you could not get your head caught in the laptop. Mm. I could get my head caught in this laptop, by the way. It's pretty easy to do.
People don't usually get their heads caught in
I know it's
laptop.
Dangerous. I know that we don't want to see a future where this might happen, but it's totally possible.
Well, real quick, we heard from many people who wanted a Twit store. We have a Twit store, not a physical store, although I would hope that one day we will have a physical store right on Park Avenue. But the new Twit store is open online. You can check out the new designs, and we brought back some popular favorites. We'll be adding show-specific gear and new designs every week. So if you like something, you better check it out first. Some, you know, one of those shirts only has 3 hours left. So check it out.
Get there. Hey, Anthony is our TD today. Anthony, how many of these shirts are courtesy of you?
All of them.
Oh, well. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that sums that up.
He made them all by hand. He sewed them. He crocheted them. He
crocheted.
He created the designs.
Anthony is a master crochet artist. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you would like to subscribe to our show, and we would like you to subscribe to our show, go to twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Of course, thanks to our technical director and artiste in the room, Anthony. Thanks to Burke for helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. Oh, is that Burke?
There's the Burke cam.
Hi, Burke. How's it going? Hi, Burke's hand. I'm really happy we have that camera all set up and ready to go. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.